Like to call the Jobs and Economic Development Policy and Finance Committee to order here. And Representative Mahoney, would you be interested in heading up to the pitcher's mound?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to move your bill?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1045, or be recommended to pass to pass and forward it to the Tax Committee. And House File 1045 relates to a technology corporate franchise. In essence, it is, and I've got a witness that will explain a little bit deeper. But the simplest way to explain it is that technology companies, young technology companies, have a lot of tax credit. They spend a lot of money, and they don't make a lot of profits in the early years. And this would be a way for them to sell those tax credits to a larger company. So with that, I'd like to bring my witness to the microphone and have him say a few words and pass this bill on.
And, sir, if you could introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shay Mandel. I'm with Life Science Alley. I want to thank you all for hearing this, for Representative Mahoney's leadership. This is a bill that we've worked on for a while, and it mirrors one other state, New Jersey, which has a similar program. This is unique to Minnesota and New Jersey, places where there are life science companies that in order to bring products to market and be successful ultimately have to go through a very long, expensive, an arduous FDA process. So it is pretty typical for a startup company in Minnesota that's working in the medical device or pharmaceutical space to have to spend 2, 3, 5, 7 years, hundreds of millions of dollars in investment before they even have a product approved. While those companies are burning capital, they're spending capital. They're employing people at higher than average wages here in Minnesota. They're spending money on clinical trials, on supplies, and throughout that process, they have no hope to make money until the FDA approves their product. This would allow them to take those net operating losses, surrender them for tax credits, get infusions of capital that would allow them to accelerate those clinical trials, hire more scientists, buy more product in Minnesota. And then the beauty of it is for those companies that make it, that get a product out there, that become successful, they've already surrendered their net operating losses, and so they immediately start to pay their taxes here in Minnesota, all the while having employed people, bought products. One last thing I would say is that New Jersey, having put this program in place, did a study after 10 years, and what they concluded is that the value of the credits let by the state was far exceeded by the state tax revenues brought in through payroll taxes, sales taxes, etc. And in addition to that, the companies that participated in the program on an annual basis ranged in job growth from 33% to 70%. It's a huge job creator. It's great for Minnesota. It's unique to Minnesota. And we appreciate the opportunity to share this with you today.
Thank you. Members of the committee, any questions? Hearing none, I'd like to, would you like to renew your motion?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to just add the final comments that I have seen the study out of New Jersey, and it is a good bill. It's not cheap, but it's a great bill to increase our Life Science Alley and our technology group as a whole. So with that, I would ask for your vote to pass this House File 1045. Recommended to pass and pass to the to the Tax Committee.
Well, that sounds good, and not gonna argue with the guy who's usually behind the microphone here. So, all those in favor of this motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed.
Mr. Mesta, you know what you're supposed to say is, would anyone like to vote against the chair's bill? That was the way I've always done it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the advice.
No one would want to do that.
not happen. No.
It's left over from the store.
What is that again?
Just looking at it. He's cold.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File XXX to be included in our omnibus bill. And I also have a couple of other announcements to make. It's Tony Albright's birthday.
Oh my goodness!
Turning 21 again.
And so,
no, he turned 60.
Because he spent all his money last time buying candy for us. For his, I don't know, what did you buy candy for?
Well, it's the momentous bill of
that's going to the house.
This biggest bill of the century. Don't give Mori anymore. But anyway, I'm passing some candy around, and also
freshman.
Ron Soderberg is slowing down at least. I thought I'd leave before he does. I'm not so sure that's going to happen, but anyway.
Well, Representative Gunther, as long as you're both at the range party tonight, I'm fine with it. So
I haven't missed one yet.
Good. Well, I would like to also just mention, because there is no House file number on this, this is an
informational
hearing only today.
But anyway, this bill is very much like the neighborhood development bill that Representative Mulry brought here earlier. And this summer, I was in St. James, Minnesota with the director of the Chino Latino Affairs Council, Hector Garcia, and we talked about how there are so many programs for the metro area for having entrepreneurship for minority members, citizens of our greater Minnesota community, that I thought I just had the Neighborhood Development Center was a great deal. Then we have Neon, we have the Midtown Global Market. There's just a lot of them. Meta, a lot of them for the metro area, and I thought, you know, we have a fairly significant number of minority populations in southern Minnesota. So I called and begged the initiative funds in southern and southwestern Minnesota, and we have some funds from there. The initiative funds are kind of a closely held secret, but we're going to try to change that. They got some statistics on what they do, and they do a phenomenal job. I know Chairman Mahoney appreciates a lot that they do in bioscience and so forth. But anyway, the Southern and Southwestern Minnesota Initiative Foundation Collaborative Pilot Project, we're asking for $200,000 per year during the biennium for this pilot project so we can give counseling and help build business plans and so forth for minority-owned businesses. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Pam Bishop.
And Dan, could you please introduce yourself for the record?
I'm Pam Bishop. I'm with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, Entrepreneur Senior Program Officer. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Happy to be here to talk and share with you about our work at the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation. We're one of six foundations in the state. We represent the 20 counties in the southeastern corner. We were created along with five others by the McKnight Foundation back in 1986. Over the course of our 26 plus years now, we've been able to invest over close to $50 million. 60% of our budget currently goes to entrepreneurship opportunities, including lending and technical assistance, as well as grant making that we make to strategic partners that align with our focus work of entrepreneurship. Lending-wise, 13% of our SBA loans do support diverse populations, minority-based businesses, where we offer technical assistance along with every loan that is made for the lifetime of the loan through our SBA program. We've provided close to 11,000 hours of technical assistance alongside the funding stream that we've provided to those minorities. We've been able to leverage over $123 million in loan money, gap financing, other partners to support our efforts around entrepreneurship. So we are very strategic in how we manage our programs and our efforts. We know that we cannot do this work alone, and that it's very important, along with this proposal, that we reach out to those partners that have demonstrated success in supporting diverse populations in our community. You'll note in the proposal provided to you that one of our key partners is the Main Street Project out of Northfield. There's an agripreneur project there. You may know Reginaldo Haslett Marquardt. He and his team have done an excellent job in developing poultry and small farm operations. They've provided this opportunity to 35 Latino population in their community, and they expect to expand that further with additional funds. And in fact, outside of the funding, they've realized the importance of apprenticeship. In order for these folks to really sustain their work, they need to grow their technical assistance program to provide a mentor or a long-standing coach that can really work alongside these individuals to grow their operation. You'll also note that we've recently become sponsors of 5 VISTA organizations in our region, all there to support folks getting out of poverty, all supporting a diverse population base. Local foods has been a strong component of our region, and I expect that to continue. We also are hopeful that through this funding that we can reach out to new partners, partners that perhaps can help us be introduced to other opportunities in our region, but also, more importantly, who have demonstrated an impact with the diverse population culture, because we do know as a foundation that it's important to have those relationships. We have tried to do this alone, and it hasn't worked successfully. So we realize the importance of collaboration and partnership, and working through those partnerships to build business plans and technical assistance opportunities, classroom training that will be helpful to grow these entrepreneurs and this population in particular. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Scott Marquardt. I'm Vice President of the Southwest Initiative Foundation, headquartered in Hutchinson. We serve an 18-county region, basically from Hutchinson to the south and west to the South Dakota and Iowa border. As ma'am indicated, we were also created in 1986 by the McKnight Foundation, and entrepreneurship is in our DNA, too. Collaboratively, for both of our organizations, just looking at the latest data, and we're very proud of this, between our two initiative foundations, we've done 1,259 loans, primarily to businesses, and that's from Main Street to Commercial Corridor to Industrial Parks. Our average loan size is increasing, although a large part of our loan activity is in microenterprise, microfinance, which is right in the space we're talking about here today. In addition to the loans, the key piece, writing the check in a lot of cases is the easy part. It's the technical assistance, both that we've provided ourselves and through our partners and friends. And it's everything from understanding financial statements, credit scores, business plans, marketing, social media, operations, managing government rules and regulations and things, especially where there's a cultural barrier or some cultural learning that needs to be done in addition to that. We've leveraged the use of technology in addition to one-on-one consultations, because it is a high-touch, high-impact business when you're dealing with somebody that's thinking about changing their life and going into business for themselves. From our perspective, new immigrants represent an increasingly important dimension in all of Southwest and Southern Minnesota. In recent years, we've had rapid growth with residents of Hispanic, African American, Asian, and Pacific Island origin. A couple examples, Nobles County in the Worthington area has the highest foreign-born percentage of population in the state, according to data. And we expect this in-migration to continue, and immigrants are 3 times as likely to start a new business as native-born residents. We think that's a very significant statistic for us to think about the changing nature of our regions. Also, new racial and ethnic groups tend to be younger and have young children, and therefore a significant factor in the makeup of our schools and our school districts. From our perspective, too, looking at our largest community in southwest Minnesota, Willmar, which is in Candiohi County, our data indicates that Candiohi County has the largest concentration of ethnic-owned businesses outside of Minneapolis-St. Paul, having 54 identified in calendar year 2012, very significant for a base community of 20,000 and the surrounding area around that. But this growth is not just happening in the regional centers of Willmar, Worthington, and in PAM's regional centers, but also very small communities. Walnut Grove, Milan, communities well under 1,000 are seeing significant growth in foreign-born population and new immigrants, and that's very exciting to us in how our region is changing. So as PAM indicated, we're also talking about a comprehensive strategy here to come alongside our partners who have done this very successfully over time, including the Willmar Area Multicultural Business Center, which serves a five-county area, not just Willmar. Their data indicates that technical assistance helps a 76% success rate. Again, we all know high failure rates in startups, and especially when you add in other layers of complexity, cultural differences, and you know, learning a new environment. So technical assistance is even more important for those folks and those families to be successful, and we'd like to strengthen our partners to come alongside with them. Also, from our perspective, again, to allow us to take additional risk with the loans, a loan loss reserve is very critical. Both the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and Southwest Initiative Foundation are SBA microlenders. That has been a large part of our loan portfolio growth over the past few years and continues to be significant. For example, last year, the 40 transactions that we did at our office, over 30 of those were microloans. And with that comes the technical assistance, which is very important. So we'd like to continue to leverage that in addition to coming alongside partners that are providing financial literacy training, leadership development, and other things for culturally diverse populations. And finally, doing what we can to help build organizational capacity, strategic planning, and other collaborative efforts throughout the region. We're very fortunate to have worked with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation since 2008, looking at the entire economy of our 38-county region and its 1 million people, not what's challenging about it, but what's good about it and how we compete globally. And in addition to bioscience, renewable energy, food manufacturing, healthcare and technology, Main Street development is as important to keeping these communities vital. And that's where we see a lot of activity with our diverse businesses. And we think this is very exciting, and we're grateful for this opportunity to come alongside. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, as usual, this is another great idea that you stole from Representative Mulry, but I do have a question on this. For instance, the NDC, Neighborhood Development Corporation, does a lot of training in southern Minnesota. If they do that, I very strongly support this, but we also need a lot in the metro area. And so if NDC goes down and does the training in this area, would that come out of these funds then, or would that come out of the metro-type funds?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulry, I'm always glad to steal from a winner. Anyway, I think that when that occasion comes up, if they ask NDC to help them, I'm sure they'll be remunerated for doing that, as well as I'm sure we have trainers in greater Minnesota. I'd like to also point out the city that the chairman lives in is the most diverse city in the state by quite a bit, and it's kind of fun to see us give that those populations a chance, just like the Neighborhood Development Center is doing. Thank you.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the testifiers, I'm looking at this from the standpoint of would you deem the project to be more of a venture capital perspective or more of a loan feature that is available to upstarts or incubating organizations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, as far as our proposal specifically, we would not be looking at any sort of lending. This would be money that we would like to provide as a forgivable loan or a grant to help sustain these efforts. The Main Street Project is a nonprofit in and of itself, and a majority of their work is reliant upon funding from other partners. We see their work as having great value to the audience they serve in regarding technical assistance. We also see the VISTA program as another capacity building opportunity for those organizations to create systems that will be longstanding in their organization and in their community. The other allocation we've proposed as a grant, but simply because we think there are partners out there, perhaps such as what was just mentioned, that we may want to create a partnership with. Perhaps there's opportunity to bring additional resources to our region and create a new opportunity to further the technical assistance and the relationship building. So as far as how we've structured our proposal, we have not created any lending component. But certainly we're open to that possibility if that's something this would be required.
Representative Albright.
In the context of the bill that we have before us, does this duplicate any efforts otherwise come before this committee or that you are aware of in the marketplace right now?
Mr. Marquardt? Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, it's our understanding and our hope that this would lift up some of the efforts that are in place right now and leverage, for example, from our perspective, the small portion that we have in there for loan loss reserve. It is to lift up federal inbound funding from SBA, or in our case also the USDA Rural Micro Entrepreneur Assistance Program. And to tie that into your original question, I see hopefully these will be tied to debt instruments at some point when they go into business. That's kind of one of the key pieces. To tie the folks to the TA is to have a loan with it, because the SBA requires us to provide technical assistance through the term of the loan. So even though this money itself per se will be not debt instruments, as Pam talked about, hopefully it would lead to that and would kind of be the key to lift up some of that money from Washington coming in.
Just one follow-up.
Yeah, one follow-up.
You talk about southern and southwestern Minnesota. Is there a demarcation in terms of what counties that does or does not include?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, yes. From our perspective, we have distinct charters. We are separate 501c3 nonprofits. When we looked at this, frankly, we wanted to leverage some of the existing strengths, and they are different between ours, so that's why they're not duplicative documents. But there is a clear, distinct line by charter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Representative Sapik.
Yes, I have one question. Does either one of your districts include Faribault or Steele County?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Savick. Yes, in fact, Steele County is our home base.
Okay.
We're located in Owatonna, and we certainly serve that area as well as the Faribault area.
And how about Freeborn?
And Freeborn as well.
Okay, thank you.
And any other questions? Representative Gunther, any closing remarks on the bill?
Well, I know this isn't a bill that's before us, but I'm hopeful that somehow it'll be put in the omnibus bill.
Hopeful?
It's good to have close personal friends. And I think this is a very good attempt at trying to get everybody in Minnesota to have a chance at the American dream. And I think it's a good bill.
Thank you, Representative Gunther, and testifiers. And let's move on to our next one. And I think you're looking pretty good on that, Representative Gunther. Representative Mahoney, long time no see.
Well, you know, every once in a while you got to spend a lot of time at the table. Members, we have spent a lot of time together. I want to thank the staff. They've been really top flight. And I could easily just say thank you, but Ms. Newman's writing, Mr. Soderberg's sage wisdom when I'm trying to do the finance, Buamar, Kaiying Tao, thank you so very much for helping me put together this omnibus bill. Having said that, I would like to present the omnibus bill to the committee. Hopefully we're not going to, well, I know the plan is to not take any testimony, but to just go over the bill and tell you where the money came from and where it's going to be spent. So I'll get right into that, and then I'll spend some time on an overview of what policy is in the bill, because this is the Jobs and Economic Development, Finance and Policy bill. The committee target was $46 million. We were able to scrounge and scrub agencies of whatever available monies were there, and came up with I guess about $18 million more. So our target is what we spent was just under $65 million. We had some fees from the accountancy, cosmetology, barber's board. We picked up $7 million in cancellations, and we have a $7.5 million UI contingency account transfer, and that is ongoing monies for, like I say, a total of just under $65 million. I will go over the bill here. I think we all have spreadsheets, and I will start right at the beginning. The Minnesota Investment Fund on line, we're starting with line 8. Minnesota Investment Fund for FY 14 and 15, there's a $10 million allotment for a total of $20 million for the biennium. The Job Creation Fund is $6 million in 14 and $12.5 in 15 for a total of $18.5. The Job Skills Partnership, now these numbers are above the base, above within the bill, or the proposed bill, the governor's proposed bill. So the Job Skills Partnership has 1.2 in 14 and $1.2 million in 15 for a total of 2.4 above the base, and I believe that's $10.8 million for the biennium. The redevelopment account has $5.6 million. Now that is not as our normal funding source. That is actual cash. That is not bonding. So it is much more flexible for our economic development people across and around the state. The film board has $2 million in it. Enterprise Minnesota has $300,000 in 14 and $300,000 in 15 for a total of $600,000. Representative Gunter, how did this bill get in here? The Southern and Southwest Minnesota Initiative Foundation pilot program for $400,000. Lucky man.
15 minutes.
One of the things I was trying to do with this bill is over the years we have spent a lot of money out of the workforce development funds that we've supplemented our general funds with workforce dollars. And I know that's been a bone of contention with some people. It has with me. So wherever I possibly felt I could do it or get away with it, I substituted cash or general funds for workforce development funds. So the business development competitive grant program, we did stay with the competitive grants and kept them made them a two-year grant. I increased that. The governor had it in at $1,096,000. The business development competitive grant program in this bill is $1.4 million. $1,425,000 per year. I'm going to move down to the, well, as you get down to line 34, well, you can look at the totals on line 24, and actually it's 28, where all funds in the business and community development is $36 million. And 14 and 35.5 and 15 for a total of 72.1. The uninsured, this at line 35 is the contingency account transfer of $7.5 million ongoing from that account to the general fund. You get down to 45, line 45, the adult workforce development refinance, where we're taking money, we're refunding the workforce development money and taking the adult workforce development competitive grant program increase out of general funds. And in the governor's bill, it was $2.7 million, and this it is almost $3.3 million per year in the Youth Workforce Development Competitive Grant increase. In the governor's bill, it was $2.85 almost. In this bill, it is $3.4 per year. On line, next page, line 48, this bill chooses to fund Fast Track, which is, I think we've had a hearing on it. I'm pretty sure we had a hearing on it in the committee. It helps the hardest of hard to up out of poverty and get a job, get an education, get a job. We funded that at $2.5 million in 14, $2.5 in 15 for a total of $5 million. And that is, not quite total ongoing in 16 and 17. It had to be reduced a little bit. The High Tech Association SciTech Experience Program, or the STEM Internship Program, was funded for the biennium at $1,014,000. One of the programs that was almost the last one to be heard, or second to the last one to be heard, the Foreign Trained Healthcare Professional Grants of $450,000. I did not realize that we had almost 300 refugee physicians that are not allowed to practice, but they are allowed to be taxi drivers and parking lot attendants. Some pretty poor use of their skills, so this is a way to fund them getting the training they need so they qualify for a residency program at the university or any other medical facility. Line 51 is an autism pilot program for $68,000. That's a Kim Norton bill in Rochester. So you come down to line 58, the workforce development totals, or I'm sorry, 61 is $14.7 million for 14 and 14.2 for 15 for a total of almost $29 million. Workforce development, let's see, where am I here? The agency base adjustment, that's an inflationary cost. Line 68, 69 is the annual cost of living study, which is a statewide initiative to find out what it costs to live in each and every one of the 87 counties across the state so we can better direct our funding. And that is ongoing. The labor market information study is for $250,000. That is where this is actually a bill that was brought to me by the Chamber of Commerce, and I thought it was a great idea. It requires Deed to put more information on their website, and we can talk a little bit more about that in the bill. But hopefully at the end of the day, they put up the number of jobs, the types of jobs that are most likely to be found in that area, what they pay, and what kind of training you need to acquire one of those jobs. The total on... No, that's not the total. Line 80, which is the trade office. Line 80, we went with the governor's numbers of $270,000 each year for a total of $540,000. The state trade and export promotion STEP grants, that's $330,000 the first year and $300,000 the second year for a total of $630,000. That's used to help small businesses, small and mid-sized businesses get ready to export to markets overseas. 82 is Invest Minnesota Marketing Initiative. That is a, it's exactly what it says. It's a marketing initiative to market Minnesota. I think it's time we change from Positively Minnesota to something new and a little bit more snazzy or exciting. Trade Policy Advisory Group at $50,000. That revives an old advisory group that is to kind of give the legislature, both House and Senate, and the governor input on any kind of trade agreements that the federal government pushes our way. Vocational rehab, we've taken the governor's numbers as they were, and they haven't changed a whole lot, so I won't spend a lot of time on them other than we did the best we could to get the maximum federal dollars. I am going to go to line 113, which is direct appropriations, and line 114. This is a general. It's got $70 million and $69 million in 15, and that is just salaries and keeping the lights on and running the buildings, running the operation. Remediation is cleanup of $700,000 each year in 2014, 2015. Workforce development has a $16 million and $16,422,000 each year for a total of $32.8. Employment and economic development total direct appropriations for all the funds are $87.7 million in 14 and $86.2 in 15. Labor and industry, the workers' comp, and this all comes out of the workers' comp fund. They have direct appropriations, or their agency operations is 10.478 each year. And then the Vinland grant, which is a rehabilitation center that that workers' comp uses more than anyone else, and that's $200,000. Total workers' comp direct appropriations is $10,678,000 each year for a total of $21,356,000. Construction codes and services, starting on line 139, elevator industry, employed regulated. That is where we're taking the elevator code is now in the electrical code, and we took it from rule. And put it. We took it from one statute and put it in another statute. And doing that, we also changed, and that's in the bill a little later. I can explain a little bit more if people care. We changed one of the fees, and so that if you're just doing a handicap lift or a short lift for someone to stay in their home, that permit is not helping to pay for the 3, 4, 5, 20-story building. Elevators, and we increased the fee for the taller elevators and decreased the fee for the handicap lift. Wind turbine inspection fee alternative, that is going to, they're going to be taking in $27,000 less. Now, the department disputes that, but not too vigorously, because another department told them that that's what it's going to cost. So they thought it was going to cost pretty much zero, and even wash. Essentially, what they're doing is they are they're rather than having fee go up and then plateau and stay at a plateau for a long time, then go back up. If, in terms of sizing, the scope of a field of wind turbines. So, if you had one wind turbine, or 10, or 50, or 100. The fees would go up, and you would not have the smaller fields paying for the larger fields. Labor, and we'll go down to the construction code service, the total appropriation. And there's a cost to the building code fund of $10,000 in 14 and $25,000 in 15 for a total of $35,000. I'm going to go down to line 150, which is child labor safety and investigations. The department has come to understand that they are getting a lot more children under the age of 18 hurt because they're doing the job they're not supposed to. This hires one person and gives them the brochures and travel allowance to go around the state and talk to business groups, whether they're the Chamber of Commerce or the manufacturers or the farmers or whom or whatever, and say, these are the laws, these are the ones you're supposed to follow, you should follow them. And this is not an enforcement agency, this is not a write out a ticket and put a fine to them, it is informational. And I think that's fair to do for, you don't want a business breaking the law and getting a ticket or a fine unwarrantedly, and we do want to keep the kids safe until they're 18. Line 151, Fair Labor Standards Act conformance. pretty much that's the cost if we do pass the minimum wage increase and index it. That is the cost to calculate it and then get that information out to the rest of the businesses in the state of Minnesota. Jobs-based education and apprenticeship program. This is it's an apprenticeship program. One of the problems that we hear constantly from businesses is their employees or their new hires are not trained well enough. This is an initiative at four community colleges to fill that need. And it is a pilot program at this particular time. I plan on taking a look at it. If I'm not chair, I hope the next chair will take a really close look to see if it's working. And if it is working, continue to fund it and engage the governor on it. If it is not working, either fix it or get rid of it. I am not opposed to getting rid of things that aren't working. As you'll find out later in this bill where I got rid of the Science and Technology Authority. Next page on line 158, labor standards and apprenticeship. The direct appropriation out of the general fund is almost $2,000,014 and $1,048,015. And out of the workforce development fund, it is $1,029,000 each year. Total appropriations in 14 for labor standards and apprenticeship is $3,014,000 and $2,015,000, $2,077,000. Workplace safety, which comes out of workers' comp, again, their base appropriation is $4,154,000 each year for a total of $8,308,000. The total direct appropriation is the same. General support division for workplace safety, or OSHA as I like to call them, is $6,039,000 in each year for a total of $12,078,000. Office, my favorite, and Representative Gunther's favorite favorite agency, combative sports. You know, the combative sports. This is a special revenue fund. There's an $80,000 statutory appropriation in office operations. This is, I believe it's new to the Department of Labor and Industry. It has been been kind of the redhead stepchild for every agency that it's been at. It's had nothing. Somebody had to take it, and Dolly stepped up, and hopefully they can write it. We set it up four years ago, with a separation of pro and amateur, and they've come to find out that there really isn't any amateurs anymore, so they made it all pro, and they charged them all the same. There's more in the bill if we would like to go into that. The Department of Labor and Industry's total, the general fund is $1,959,014, $1,048,015. Workers' comp, total expenditure is $20,871,000 in both years for a total of $41,742,000. And workforce development is $1,029,000 in both years for a total of $2,058,000. All funds totaled for the biennium are $46,807,000. Bureau of Mediation Services, $1.584 each year for a total of $31.68. It's the labor and business kind of mediation. I'll break this down. The supplemental staff, mediation staff, which is two new hires, is $189 in 14 and $193 in 15 for a total of $382. Case and document management system replacement. Essentially, it's exactly what it says. They're replacing their case and document management system, and there's a one-time charge of $100,000. The Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution is $256,000 each year for a total of $512,000. That is a Carolyn Lean bill that we heard. It is It is for grants to the Bureau of the Area Bureaus of Mediation, which is to try to settle disputes before they get to court. Never thought I'd be funding something like a court, but you know, I'm sure there's a policeman somewhere in his grave rolling over at the moment. But and then there's also, for larger issues, there's a part of this $256,000 will be used. And I will say it this way, I became a convert to this because there's so many large issues that we are not ever able to deal with. We get in our trenches and we throw hand grenades at each other. And I, as a personal example, I have spent years on the child custody and literally did not want to talk to the people on the other side of the issue than I was. They called us together, and by the end of, and we had to go out and find private funding for it, which was very, very difficult and almost did not happen. The end of the day, the 35 people that were in that room actually were talking to each other, sharing a cup of coffee, trying to find solutions. They have not got to that solution. I hope they continue to work on it. I certainly am. But it is a way that we can sometimes get out of our trenches and find an answer to big problems that are helping, that are hurting or hindering our state. So I'm very supportive of it, and I was glad somebody brought that forward. I'm going to skip down to the Board of Accountancy. Their general, they have a direct appropriation of $480,000 and board operations of $225,000 and the adjustment, inflationary adjustment of $3,000. Total figure for the biennium for the Board of Accountancy is $1.3 million. The Board of Architecture and Engineering, they have $774,000 for direct appropriation, and then their inflationary line item is $4,000 and $9,000 for a total biennium appropriation of $1.561 million. Board of Cosmetology, I'm just going to go directly to the total direct appropriation. You can see what the board operations and board adjustment. They have a $2.7 million total appropriation. Board of Barbers, which is on the next page, for its total is $640,000. Workers' Comp Court of Appeals, the direct appropriation is 1.7 each year for a total of 3.4 million. The IT analysis and upgrade and judge retirement payouts is a one-time payment of $210,000. I better not say, I would have to look inside and see the IT system and payment is a one-time payment, and many of the other are having to do this. Many of the other departments are having to do this. Total appropriation for the biennium is $3.6 million. Iron Range Resources, that's a statutory appropriation. We really have very little to say or do over that. That is their taconite money, and that is their property tax money. I'm not sure entirely why it's coming through the state, only just to aggravate us on this committee, but that's a total for the biennium of $99,410,000. Again, the Science and Technology Authority is repealed, and that's $107,000 to the general fund, back to the general fund. All agencies and accounts, total appropriations, if you go right down to the bottom, you've got general, you've got $77 million. I'm going to go to the biennium dollar figure. And the general is $153 million. Workforce development is almost $35 million. Remediation is $1.4 million. And workers' comp is $5.3 million. Total direct appropriations of $234,860,000. All agencies and accounts, we have another total. The Region 3 occupation tax, Coochiching and Carlton County, I think that's their taconite tax, but frankly, I've had it explained to me a half a dozen times, and I think I'm going to have Ms. Soderberg, am I right, that's their taconite tax?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a portion of the occupation tax, which is the what would be the equivalent of a corporate income tax for the taconite companies. So yeah, it's not the production tax, but it's a portion of the occupation tax.
Thank you. So I am going to drop down to our the bill net general fund impact on line 335. Expenditures less revenue is 135. The bill to the committee general fund target, I think we hit a zero, which is what our goal was. The rest of this is stuff, as I've said earlier, is the non-general fund revenue, the UI contingency fund transfer, the repeal of the Science and Technology Authority, the combative sports adjustment, fee adjustment, elevator industry employee regulated, the plumbing fees, elevator fees, plumbing review, and wind turbine total. And that, oh, I better not skip this one. Down at 362, the unemployment insurance policy. This is reimbursement for shared work. $2,003,000. Shared work is something that's been around for a long time. Company, rather than laying off people, they go from 40-hour week to a 30-hour week, and the employee is eligible for 10 hours worth of unemployment insurance. And that, for any length of time, for a set length of time, it's all in their plan, and then the department has to okay that. It's been very helpful for thousands and thousands of employees to help some of these companies where they work get through lean times. Kind of the nice thing here that I'm very happy to do on line 363, employers' unemployment insurance tax reduction. I think this is a Rabinovich bill, and I think a few members on our committee signed on to it. In FY14, it is a tax break to our companies in the state of Minnesota, small, medium, and large, of $114,328,000. In FY15, it's a $200,829,000 tax break, and in FY16, it's a $31 million tax break. Members, if there's fiscal questions, I can take them now, or I can go to some of the policy in the bill. If people, I'll take the lead if there's a question on fiscal stuff.
Any questions, members? Senator Bula?
Yes. Question, Representative Mahoney. What was the baseline total in 12 and 13?
In 12 and 13?
Yeah.
I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Soderholm.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the accounts that we have, it was about $110 million. For the biennium. For the biennium.
For the biennium.
Yep.
So that was a, Mr. Chair. So that was a $110 million, and we're looking at the target this year is $135
million. Actually, that is the amount of money that was appropriated. So it would be the comparable number on the sheet here would be $154,112,000. Since that they're both appropriations at that point, okay. They're both appropriate.
Follow up, Representative Eagle?
I'm good.
Thank you. Any other questions, members?
Members, I can go over, give you a quick overview. I've always found when I'm doing a large bill, it's probably simplest to follow the House research. They do a great job. But I do actually want to say that, and I don't think I'm hiding anything here. For those who sat on this committee for any length of time, we have, over the last 10 years, 12 years, or better, we have shortchanged economic development in the state. We have consistently cut it. and squeezed it as tight as possible. 729 is not, doesn't have a ton of bold, wonderful initiatives. The apprenticeship initiative, I think, is really, it's got a good chance of making a difference. The initiative we're going to take in southern Minnesota, the pilot programs on autism, those are some wonderful things. What I did here in this bill, as we went through all of our committee hearings, and I sat and listened to you as you told me what was important to you, I've funded programs that have worked in the past. I put money into programs that are tried and true, that have actually worked here or in other states, and increase them with cash where possible so that they are the most flexible possible they can be. Our Economic Development Committee, Economic Development Agency, has a wonderful, has a good toolbox. It could be perfect, but we're government, we're never going to be perfect. But if we give them the tools and then give them the flexibility and the cash to do those use those tools, I think they can do a great job. So, members, Article 1, I'll go to the bill. Most of the Article 1 is the appropriations. Article 1, Section 1 is the appropriations. I'm going to go through this. Better get my glasses back on.
As much time as you need, Representative Mahoney.
No, I got 40 minutes. As I said earlier, we stuck with the competitive grants. I know there was some concern about that. We thought that was a good idea. I'm already through Article 1. I didn't find anything that I thought was overly exciting in there that you needed to have any questions on. How about if I open it up for any questions, Mr. Chair?
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Could you use your mic, Representative Mahoney?
Sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, or Chair Mahoney, on page 6, under the foreign trained health care professionals, it says other allied health care professionals. Does that include mental health professionals? Because especially in those communities, those are very important.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, you know, I will be honest with you. That never crossed my mind. This was more the people that showed up and asked were physical health. I certainly can find that out before Thursday when we mark up the bill.
Mr. Chair.
One second. We have Representative Albright.
Well, is that to this point, Representative Clark?
I'm just going to try to answer the question, Representative Mori.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair and Representative Mori, as the author of that amendment, I can tell you it covers all health care workers that are licensed. I mean, the purpose of it would certainly be to include, you know, clinical psychologists, you know, mental health workers, all of them, of course.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, then, Representative Mahoney, would you then hopefully add mental health also when you're analyzing the bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, you could, you know, make Ms. Newman work a little bit more.
Okay.
Or we could just add it. I think in the bill itself, we're trying to focus on primary care, health care, internists, primary physicians, oncologists, but I'm happy to open it up a little bit more.
It covers it.
Representative Mullery, follow up?
We'll talk before Thursday, but knowing that community, having been worked with the Council of Black Minnesotans, a lot of African groups, I think that would also be a good idea to include them.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Clark.
Representative Mulder, I assure you they are included, but if you want to put them in there specifically, that's fine. They are included.
I have a question for those two. just to this particular.
Okay. Representative Pieper.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And then it says, where are we? The commissioner on line 7.12, additional criteria established by the commissioner. I just wonder, is this Commissioner Dolly or HHS, since it has to do with health and human services? And I'm just not sure.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, this would be the Department of Deed.
Okay.
So it would have to go through them. It is grants through the Department of Deed to healthcare professionals. And that's at least how it worked the last time.
Representative Keeper, follow up?
No, that's good. Thanks.
Thank you. And Representative Albright?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this might be for the current presiding chair. But on line 279, it describes Northeast Minnesota Economic Protection Trust. Just wondering if we could be provided with a definition of what that trust endears itself.
Which line?
279 in the summary.
Okay. No.
I was looking at
In the spreadsheet.
Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Albright, members. Sometimes this is referred to the Dougie Johnson Fund. A few years back it was called that. And what it is that the trust fund is, the corpus of the trust fund is in trust. It can't be spent, I think it's till 2028 or some number. It's 2025. It's several years from now. But the interest earned on the trust fund is appropriated in law to the IRRRB to be used for economic development purposes. So there's a trust fund that's supposed to, what its purpose is that it will be available whenever the mining industry eventually runs out of ore, and that money will then be available to take care of trying to diversify the economy. In the meantime, the interest from that trust is appropriated the IRRRB to do economic development programs. So this is the interest from the trust.
Follow up, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then to Mr. Soderberg. Then, as a point of clarification, that we are, as a state, then the trustee for the trust?
Mr. Chairman, because the IRRRB is a creation of the state, I mean, the agency was created by the legislature. Yeah, I guess we are, in a sense, you know, the executors of the trust. Yeah, the legislature is the executor of the trust. But this is just the interest. The corpus of the trust is not available until, and under current law, until I think it's 2025 or whatever, it's out of the future.
Representative Albright, follow up?
No, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
I'm going to just go through a little bit of the bill and Article 2, which starts on page 14. It's just a lot of technical language to make space for the elevator constructors. Get to page 19. It kind of clarifies what, it makes it simpler to understand what buildings the state inspects rather than in some places calling them out by name. Line 1912, the state governs the construction, alteration, repair, and use of buildings. Get down to 19. It adds charter school building projects, which cost more than $100,000. So that's a lot of just technical language. Direct supervision on line on page 20, line 3, just defines how who you have to have a license, and you have to be supervised by an unlicensed person has to be supervised by them. Let's see if I'm getting this correct. Most of the rest of this is just, it's not actual new language. It's the elevators being taken from one section of law to the next. on page 29, it does, at page 29, line 25, gets to the permit fees for elevator inspection. So when you inspect an elevator, and then the inspection fee is a change for, I better read this so I get it correct. Permit inspection fees to construct, install, alter, repair, remove elevators are as follows. Permit fee is $100, and then the inspection fee is 0.015 of the total cost of the permit, the permitted work. And then there's an additional fee of up to $80 an hour if the contractor makes a mistake. On the next page, page 30, line 24, it just exempts vertical reciprocating conveyors, which I'm not entirely sure what they are. 31, it's got respect. The one piece that I saw in there is request for inspection means that you've applied for a permit, so you have requested. There apparently was some questions about that. I'm going to move to on page 38, and it actually starts on page 37, line 34, where I talked about it, strikes out when it calls out buildings by name, so hospitals, nursing homes, supervised living facilities, and replaces it on 38.1 with state licensed facilities as defined in 326B, subdivision 0.103. Just makes it a more broad brush for it. On 39, it gets the plumbing fixtures. They are trying again to have a diagonal line rather than a line that jumps up, levels off, and charges a lot of money no matter how many fixtures you put in. So in this scenario, you have a charge of like $100 for the permit and $25 per sink after that. It really gets the people who are putting a lot of sinks in paying a lot of money for a lot of services. Page 40, this just defines who the owner of real property is or is not. Kind of something in the condos and townhomes issue where you had commercial developers being dragged into lawsuits where they didn't have to be. On page 41, you have the manufactured homes. It changes who can be a dealer. Before, you had to actually work for someone. A salesperson had to work for 2 years before you could open up your own manufacturing home sales facility. Now, you just have to have 2 years. It says you don't have to if you meet all the other requirements or the prerequisites of a license. So now you do not have to have that 2 years worth of working for somebody else. The next page talks about the what some of the requirements are. Article page 46 starts the apprenticeship program called JEEP. Page 51 is the cost of living study and the labor market information. And if anyone's got questions and they want me to stop at any time, otherwise I'm just going to try and get through this. Page 55, starting on line 28, starts the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. And we had a committee presentation on that. Page 60, line 7, starts the Trade Advisory Policy Group. Page 63 is the Film Board. This is on page 65 is the autism study and pilot program. Article 4, unemployment insurance, starts on page 67. The one thing that kind of interesting, they're trying to put in law and continue doing some of the things that the federal government had pilot programs on, the entrepreneurial business consulting, and they clarified the language and it's a lot of technical changes so they can continue to do that. The next page is page 68, line 5, converting layoffs into Minnesota businesses or CLIME makes the necessary changes. On page 69, you have some technical language on line 26, just clarifying something for the unemployment people, makes it easier for someone who had a job, a full-time job and a part-time job, not laid off from their full-time job, to collect unemployment. Again, there's more on CLIME on page 70. Page 70, line 20, starts the shared work plan, kind of lays out some of the things that an employer has to notify the employee about and how that employer would go about getting into a shared work plan. Also clarifies if on shared work your hours go up, your unemployment goes down. If your hours go down, your unemployment goes up. Page 74, line 8, gets to the contingency fund transfer from the UI fund. On page 75, line 4, starts the unemployment insurance tax, employer tax reduction. It also has the commissioners authorized to request shared work funds from the federal government to be reimbursed. I kind of fumbled that in committee, but I spent a lot of time just in case Representative Albright wanted to ask me a lot more questions on it, so now I can answer them. So, page 76 starts the barbers board, and there are a couple of changes in the retake of a written exam. There's a cost for it now rather than paying for the new a whole new exam. You can pay $10 to retake the test. Let's see. There is registration. Who may be? I won't go into that. Somebody will get me on that. There is the clarification of who can use a barber pole in this bill. Page 83 starts the cosmetology, and there are a variety of fee changes in there, all negotiated with the board, and they brought them to us. And I try to stay away from them. On page 88 starts the accountancy board. Actually, it's 87, and there again, most of that was brought to us by their board, and I'm sure the accountants. All the accountants were watching every penny, so that's pretty easy. Leave them go with that. Last on the list here is on page 95 is the St. Paul River Center Arena temporary loan forgiveness. And then on page 95, line 25, starts the repealer, which is the Science and Technology Authority. Now, some members have asked which each bill is in here, which one of the bills they are that are in here, whether they're like House File 1046 or House File 319 or whatever. I did not have enough time to get that done. You can have that done in committee, or we can get that to people a little later. All right. And unless there's a request, I'll get that to people a little later. And so people can take a look at the bill and see where it is. And with that, Mr. Chair, I can stand for any questions that the committee may have.
Members, any other questions? Hearing none, I would like to thank Representative Mahoney. Any other closing remarks on your behalf?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. We will be marking the bill up or taking amendments and taking testimony on Thursday. I want everybody to be aware that, we have a 24-hour rule in the committee. I am going to move to suspend that. If you get your amendments to the House staff by 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock on Wednesday, so that they can get them to the committee or to the chair by 9 o'clock, 9:30 the next morning, they will all be considered copacetic, and we'll just go on from there. This is a big bill, a short timeline. I want to be fair to everybody. Well, with that, read the bill. It's a great bill. There's the things that are not in it, you know, I'm sure you all know. See you on Thursday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just a reminder, our next unofficial jobs meeting is tonight at Mancini's from 6 to midnight, and Mr. Gerber, you're even invited, so we hope to see you there.
Of course he's invited.
And I'll let you all know the meeting is adjourned now. Thank you. Okay.